And welcome, everyone, to episode 7. We're here, as always, at the Zeus Tech Studios, joined by Alf and producer Brian. And Alf, take 2 minutes, dos minutos, and let our listeners know what's in store for them on today's podcast.
Yes, Mike, we got a couple exciting items for today. We have the Michael B. Experience, which is your WWF experience. I cannot wait to hear that. I mean, our audience is going to be surprised of the things that you did for them and your experiences with the WWF. I mean, I'm really excited about this subject. I love wrestling, so I'm not sure our fans out there love wrestling as well. And the second item for today is Alf's Talk the Talk. These are the Spanglish words that we come up with in South Florida, and you need to know these words because that's the only way you're going to survive in South Florida, is to understand some of these words that are coming out.
Oh, so this is coming back from, we started this in a previous podcast. Right. And
podcast number one.
And so it's making its way back?
Yes, it is, by popular demand.
And we're calling it Alf's Talk the Talk.
That's right.
Oh, I love that. That's fun. That's going to be great. So Alf's going to come up with the made-up Spanish words, and he's going to test producer Brian and myself to see if we can figure out what these words mean.
That's right.
We had a great time with them before, and I'm sure it's going to be a lot of
fun. Yeah, it's going to be a big quiz, and our fans are going to be interested in knowing those kind of words. You know, they need to survive in South Florida, these words. So, speaking of survival.
Yes.
The Miami Dolphins.
Oh, let's talk about the Miami Dolphins. We have to always start like we do every week, the Miami Dolphins, and they have been executing their plan to perfection, and they just hit the first bump in the road. They drove over the New York Jets.
Yes.
And beat the Jets.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I was watching that game. It takes our arch enemy to ruin our plans. First of all, the Jets hire the head coach we fired, right?
Right.
And not only that, they come into the game, one game won.
Right.
And they lose against us. So they ruin our plan. Of course, the Jets ruin our plan, right?
Well, you're right about that. And things now look a little dicey for the Dolphins getting that number one pick.
That's right.
And Tua Tagovailoa. The current landscape now, the Cincinnati Bengals still have not won a game.
That's right.
So they are in the driver's seat. We no longer control our own destiny. Cincinnati has not won a game, and Cincinnati now has said they're going to start a rookie quarterback the rest of the way for the season. Doesn't bode well for them.
That's right.
The Jets have only won a game just like the Dolphins, but the Dolphins beat the Jets, so they are ahead of us.
That's
in
right.
The draft order. So we go from potential number one, now maybe all the way down to number three.
Three, maybe four or five. We're one of four teams with only one victory, and the Jets are ahead of us. So we may drop all the way down, and maybe for not all these picks that we have. In order to move up, we may have to give away all the picks that we've gathered for next year and the following.
Now, I will say this. There is still some opportunity out there for Miami to get back on track. And by that, I mean they do play the Jets again.
Yes.
It's what we call a must-lose game.
Yeah.
And then they play the Cincinnati Bengals.
That's right.
That's
the Tua Bowl.
Referring to as the Tua Bowl.
That's correct. That's correct.
That's a must.
Must lose.
Have to lose game.
Yes. And it's a must watch to must lose, yes, game. So, yes. Yes, right? So, Mike, this is very complex for us because this is our home team. We root for them. And to go against them, I mean, we're sad that they actually won a game because it ruins their long-term plans to get that franchise quarterback.
So since we've been following them in the podcast, this is the first little detour in the road.
Yes.
And we'll see if they can't get back on track next week and get back in the loser's bracket.
That's right, that's right.
And continue to lose games.
Well, one thing is they are getting better, Mike, and they're charming to watch, if you will, because they're really trying. It almost seems like these guys can't make it into the NFL. They don't have any chance for it. People are against them. I love their spirit of playing. I enjoy watching them, but I also want them to lose. You know, so it's kind of a weird thing.
That is kind of weird, but I guess we'll continue to watch.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, when I think about fantastic experiences, you know, and your experience in particular, we're going to talk about the Michael B. experience. We're going to talk about WWF. People don't know this. I don't know if they do or not, but you actually worked for the WWF, right?
I did. Back in the early to mid-80s, I spent 2 years working for Vince McMahon and the World Wrestling Federation, which is now commonly known as the WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment.
That's right. That's right.
And the way I got the gig was pretty interesting. I was a college student at the time at FIU, and I was the public address announcer for the FIU men's basketball team.
Oh, okay.
But at the time, FIU didn't have an on-campus facility to play basketball. So we had to go to different venues around the city of Miami to play basketball.
Right.
One of the more unusual venues we went to is a downtown location called the James L. Knight Center.
It's still there.
And I'm sure all of our South Florida listeners know about the James L. Knight Center. For those of you not familiar with South Florida and Miami, it's in the heart of downtown. It sits in a hotel, but it is it's a beautiful theater set up for concerts, maybe stand-up comedian acts, plays, things like that. But for FIU, they put down a basketball court.
Wow.
And we played basketball at the James L. Knight Center for a couple of seasons. Well, the reason I tell that story is one day I got a call from the manager of the James L. Knight Center, and he said, "Michael, we just signed a new client, and they're looking for a ring announcer, and I think you'd be great for the job." And so I told him I would be happy to take the job. I really haven't done a whole lot of boxing announcing. And he said, "Oh, no, it's not boxing. It's professional wrestling."
Wow.
It's the World Wrestling Federation. And so I agreed, got the job, and spent, as I said, 2 years with Vince and the World Wrestling Federation in Miami and in West Palm Beach as the ring announcer for the WWF.
So tell me, if the ring announcer, tell me what you did in order to get ready for that ring announcer job.
Well, one of the things that they said is, listen, you're going to have to show up in a tux each and every night that you're working. I worked once a month in Miami, once a month in West Palm Beach. We have an agreement with a tuxedo store in Coral Gables called Genghis Formal Wear. And so every month I'd go down to Genghis Formal Wear, and they'd have a tux all picked out for me, and I'd check it out and try it on, and I'd wear the full regalia, man, the whole tuxedo outfit, and that's what I would wear to announce the wrestling matches.
Yeah, so you would go to the Genghis store to get your tux.
Right.
And then what's the next thing you did? Did they prep you to announce each of the wrestling matches?
So I'll tell you a little bit about my first night on the job. That was an interesting, I got a couple of interesting stories for that. So I arrive at the James L. Knight Center, and I go backstage, and I meet with the local WWF promoter. He's a former wrestler by the name of Pat Patterson. Pat and I sit down, and we've got the entire night's card. It's on a piece of paper. They hand it out to all the fans, kind of like a program.
Right.
And it lists all the different matches.
And who was on that card, by the way? I'd be interested if you recall.
I can only remember the main event was Andre the Giant.
Oh, my.
My first night ever.
That's
as
awesome.
The ring announcer for the World Wrestling Federation. And the main event is Andre the Giant. So I'm with Pat, and we're looking at the card, and he's explaining to me, okay, this wrestler is wrestling this guy. You're going to introduce this guy. You're going to tell everybody where he's from and how much he weighs, and then introduce his name. And so this is back in the mid-80s, where I think everybody, except those people that would sit in the front row at wrestling matches, everybody pretty much figured this was not real.
Right, right.
Now
right.
They've come out and they certainly, right. Embrace the fact that it's
I remember.
It's
I thought it was
but
real,
back
too.
Then, so. They were still trying to, keep this shroud of secrecy. So I made the mistake of asking Pat Patterson, the promoter. We're looking at the first match of the night. So-and-so is wrestling so-and-so. And I turn to him and I say, okay, and who wins?
Oh.
And he looks at me like I just insulted his mother.
Oh, my.
And says to me, what do you mean who wins? How do I know who wins? You watch the match and you see who wins.
Oh, my.
And that, I learned my first lesson.
Never again
did I ever ask anybody anything before a match about who was going to win that match that night.
What was the event name? Do you recall? Was it WrestleMania?
No,
or was
it didn't have a name. It was just Welcome to the World Wrestling Federation here at the James L. Knight Center. And so I would go into the ring. I would say there was probably about 8 matches a night. So I'd go into the ring 8 times.
Did the mic come down?
Well, you would think that the mic would come down from the, suspended from the ceiling, but the Jamesville Night Center didn't have that technology available. So I was bringing just a corded mic in underneath the ropes because I'd have to climb in under the ropes to get into the ring. So I would be in the ring, introduce the wrestlers. I'd then leave. They'd wrestle. One of them would win. I'd come in and I'd say, you know, the winner at 10 minutes and 14 seconds of this match was whoever. And it was something. But that first night with Andre the Giant is an experience that I'll never forget.
I mean, you stood there in the ring with Andre the Giant. Well, how big is that?
Yeah, man? Andre the Giant, we called him the eighth wonder of the world.
That's right.
7'6", well over 300 pounds.
Wow.
Just a huge, huge mammoth of a man. His hand was so big that if when he shook your hand would disappear in it. I mean, you would never be able to see it. So he, just a huge, huge guy from the south of France.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Whether he was or he wasn't, that's the way he wanted to be introduced.
Okay.
And so here he is in the main event. And at the time, in wrestling, you have wrestlers who are either faces or heels. So if you're a face,
that's right,
you're a good guy.
Right.
If you're a heel, you're a bad guy.
Right.
And Andre was a face. He was a good guy at this time. And the fans loved him. And I don't remember who he was wrestling, but all I remember is the guy he was wrestling cheated.
Oh, really?
Imagine that. The bad guy
cheated
and beat Andre by cheating.
Oh, my.
So the referee counts Andre out. 1, 2, 3. Bell rings. Andre loses. He's furious. And I walk in the ring, and my job is to announce who won. So I'm doing my thing. The winner of the match at 12 minutes and 47 seconds, the bad guy. Well, the minute I say that, Andre the Giant comes up to me and grabs me by my Genghis formal wear tuxedo lapels and starts shaking me. What did you say? What did you say? I am scared to death. I don't know what to tell this guy. I said, the referee told me. The referee told me. He, in disgust, pushes me back, and I get out of the ring as fast as I can.
Oh, my.
And he gets all out of the ring, and everybody's booing. And at that time of the World Wrestling Federation, every now and then something might come flying into the ring.
Right, absolutely.
So the evening ends, Andre's gone, he's angry, he's back in the back in the dressing rooms, and now I have to go back. Now, I have a separate dressing room from the wrestlers, but I got to go in the back where this
big man, imposing man,
mad,
by the way.
Giant of a man is. So I go back into the back and the dressing rooms, and who's standing there waiting for me? Pat Patterson and Andre the Giant. And I am saying, okay, I'm fired. That's it. I'm done. One night, one and done. I'm out of here. And Pat has got a smirk on his face. And he said, I wanted to talk to you, and Andre wanted to talk to you. I said, did I do something wrong? He said, absolutely not. He said, I just wanted to tell you that Andre does a bit when he loses matches like this with the ring announcer, where he grabs the ring announcer by the lapels and the ring announcer kind of squats down a little bit and then kind of lifts himself up. And then Andre takes that momentum and lifts the ring announcer over his 7'6" head holding him by the tuxedo lapels. That was our plan tonight. But I told Andre not to do it because it was your first night and we were afraid you would quit and never come back.
That's a great story.
To which Andre walked up to me in his European accent said to me, I'm so sorry. I hope I didn't scare you too bad.
I'd be scared to death.
And that is a story, obviously, I will never forget. That was my very first night working for Vince in the World Wrestling Federation.
And Mike, you have a story with the Iron Sheik that I want everybody to know about, too.
So as I said, we worked in Miami, worked in West Palm Beach. In my 2 years, I had one opportunity, one chance to work with probably the most famous wrestler of that era, and maybe of all time, a guy by the name of Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the matches were up in West Palm Beach that month, and Hulk Hogan was wrestling, and his title was on the line. It was a title defense. And sometimes when I'd go up to drive up to Palm Beach, my mom would say to me, "Hey, why don't I drive up with you? It's a long drive. I don't want you to fall asleep on the way home." And so sometimes mom would come with me to the matches. And so we'd get there, and I had introduced her to security and to the ushers. And so they would always just find her a seat. And so that night, with Hulk Hogan defending his title, she came up with me, and I brought her in. And security and the ushers tried all night to find her a seat, but they couldn't. Now, I had no idea that this was going on because I'm in the ring announcing all the matches. So, unfortunately, I would find out later, they had to ask my mom to leave.
Oh.
And so she had to go sit out at the loading dock where we would all come in and out of the West Palm Beach Auditorium. She had to go sit out there and wait for the night to end and for me to come out and meet her. So the night goes on, and Hulk Hogan comes out, and it's glorious, and you know he's ripping his shirt like he does, and he's doing his
Hulkamania
thing. Hulkamania, right? You know, take your vitamins, and
I remember.
And so he wins, of course he wins, and he's holding up the belt, and everything's great, and the night ends, and everybody leaves, and on that card earlier in the night was the Iron Sheik, and you had mentioned the Iron Sheik, and so I'll just let you know. He had wrestled a couple of matches before then. So the night ends, and I leave, and I don't see my mom at the time, but I figure she's probably waiting for me on the loading dock. So I go out to the loading dock, and I said, "So what did you think?" She said, "Well, I've been out here for about the last hour and a half."
Oh,
so they didn't have any place for me, and so she said, "I just waited out here." She said, "But I was peeking in the door every now and then to see what was going on."
Yeah.
She said, "But I have to tell you, I met the nicest person." I said, "Really?" So here we are at the loading dock. We're walking to my car. I've got my tuxedo over my shoulder and my mom to my side. And she said, "Yes, this nice man came out and saw me sitting here by myself. And he came up to me and he says, 'Young lady, what are you doing sitting here all by yourself?'" And she said, "Well, I'm the announcer's mom and there wasn't a seat. And so they asked me to sit out here." "Oh, that is terrible." I said, "Mom, who was this?" And we're still walking. And now the fans have congregated because they know where the wrestlers walk after the matches. And they're just trying to either get an autograph or they want to tell one of the wrestlers they hate them or whatever it is. So we're walking through this gauntlet of fans. And my mom's telling me, "Oh, he was the nicest man. The Iron Sheik. He was so nice." I said, "Mom, stop talking right now. Stop talking. Do not say one more word about this man until we get in the car." So I had to get her in the car, the doors closed, before she could tell me what a nice guy the Iron Sheik was, because certainly their demeanor as the character in the ring is totally different than the person
he was a heel.
He was a bad guy.
Yeah.
He had that loaded boot that he would load up that boot and kick you with that boot. And so, but my mom, to this day, if you ask her who your favorite wrestler is of all time, she will say the Iron Sheik, which is pretty random. But yeah, that was another fun story.
That's a great story, Michael. Is there anything, other characters that you talked about? Hulk Hogan? Did you see Macho Man Randy Savage?
You know, Macho Man and I worked together a lot.
Really?
He came to Miami a lot, and he came to Miami with his wife. Now, nobody knew it was his wife at
Miss
the
Elizabeth?
Time. The beautiful Miss Elizabeth. She was his manager, was the story, right? His manager was Miss Elizabeth. And so Randy and Elizabeth were there a lot. They were there for we must have done 6 or 8 shows together in the year or two that I worked. And we had always had the same kind of shtick with each other. And Randy loved it and Elizabeth loved it and I had fun with it. And it was when I would introduce Randy, I would always introduce Elizabeth first. And so, managed by the lovely and beautiful Elizabeth. And then I couldn't even get Elizabeth out of my mouth. Here comes Randy Savage.
you better keep your eyes off of her and look straight ahead or I'm gonna
he would talk like this.
We did that every single time they came to Miami, and the crowd ate it up every time because he would get nose to nose to me with this, and we would go in the back and laugh about it, and it was a great time, and I loved working with them, and it's just a shame that we don't have them around anymore, but it's great memories of both he and Elizabeth.
Well, thank you, Mike, for the WWF experience. That was fantastic. I'm sure it is a walk in memory lane, if you will, for everybody, and it's just a fantastic subject, you know, for everybody to listen to, you know. Just one last question before we let you go.
Sure.
Did any of the wrestlers make you feel nervous?
You know, actually, there were a couple of wrestlers that I felt a little uncomfortable around. One of them was a wrestler by the name of George the Animal Steel.
I remember him, yeah.
George the Animal Steel, he used to hail from parts unknown, weight unknown. That's the way I had to introduce him. But the reason that George made me feel so nervous in the ring, George was always to himself in the back. He was always quiet and to himself in the back. So I never really got to know George.
He's a little loose on yeah.
And so, but the thing that George used to do in the ring, so the ring is square, and in each corner, the cables are connected by something called a turnbuckle. And the turnbuckle was padded, and inside that padding, you had like foam or heavy cotton or something. And George the Animal Steel would take that turnbuckle and tear it open and start eating the insides of the turnbuckle.
I remember that.
And it was insane. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know this guy very well outside of the ring. If he's in here eating turnbuckles, what is he going to do to me?
Yeah.
So I always had two eyes on George the Animal Steel. Another wrestler, same name but totally different thing, that had me always very, very leery, was a wrestler named Gorgeous George.
I don't remember him.
Gorgeous George, well, today, Gorgeous George couldn't exist, but back then, Gorgeous George would come out with his face all made up with women's makeup.
Oh, my.
And wearing bows and clips in his hair.
Oh, my.
Prancing around like a butterfly in the ring and everything. And so Gorgeous George, and if you remember earlier, we talked about the microphone situation.
Yes.
I didn't have a drop mic. I had to bring a mic in with a cord into the ring.
Right.
So here's Gorgeous George, made up face, hair all made up, just prancing around. And as I'm introducing George, George is walking towards me with his lips puckered. Like he wants to kiss me. And George was pretty smart. I couldn't get away from George because he would walk towards me while stepping on the microphone cord.
Oh, my. He's a smart guy.
So he's walking on the microphone cord so I can't pull away. And here he is getting closer and closer, ready to put a wet one right on my face. So now the race is on. Do I finish his introduction first, or does he get to me and give me a big wet kiss?
Oh, my.
Well, you never heard Gorgeous George announced and introduced so fast. I dropped that mic and ran out of that ring as fast as I could. But those two guys, my. I always had to keep my eye out with those two guys.
Mike, those are great stories, man. I love WWF, and I know our fans, too, and your fans as well. So with that said, we'll give you a breakdown, and when we return, we'll talk about Alf's Talk the Talk. Well, now, Mike, we're going to go over the Alf's Talk the Talk.
Oh, it's time for Alf's Talk the Talk.
That's right. We're going to go over some words that are made up in South Florida that you need to know because people speak this way. And, you know, as you know, we have a big Latin culture and community here, and they have problems kind of, you know, talking the words in English. So they make up their own words, if you will. Words that don't exist in the English dictionary nor in the Spanish dictionary. So.
Now, again, I think one of our previous podcasts, the first one, we debuted this, and I asked, who's the keeper of these made-up words? And it's you.
Yes.
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 You have the lexicon.
That's correct.
All right, good. So you've got some more for us today.
That's right. That's right. Here
All
we
right,
go.
What do you got?
Here we go.
Producer Brian, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
All right, we got to try to guess
what
these
are. This is a quiz for everybody to survive in South Florida. You need to know a few of these words here. All right. That's it. D-A-S-I-T. That's how actually you would say it.
What?
That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
I think that's so. Right. I'm going to go with that's it.
That's it. That's right. That's it.
That's it.
They have issues with the TH, so they replace, you know,
that's
a D.
That's much
with
more
the
efficient than the way we say it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's all it. One thing.
That's it. So if you know, if you say, oh, it's not a dash hound or anything, you know, people think, no, it's that's it. No, that's my, no, it's that's it. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, hey.
That's it.
Good job, producer.
You guys
Brian.
Are really
one for one.
All right, how about this one? Flonquial or floqueando.
Flonquial.
Yeah,
or
F. It will. You would say like F L O N Q U I A R. Yes, that's right. To flunk.
Oh, producer Brian, look at that. So you flunked.
Yeah.
So
if you're floqueando, it's actually the present tense. So
okay. Oh, so these made up words have tenses.
Yeah, yeah. Flonquial is you already did. It's a past tense. So yeah. So.
Oh, so if you're a past flunky.
Yes.
You're a what?
Yeah,
the past is.
It's yeah, flonquial.
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 Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Flonque.
Okay.
Yeah, just throw that in there. Yeah.
Flonque.
Yeah. Hangyal.
Huh?
Hangyal. Yeah, I got you on that one.
Hangyal.
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 I'm not going to spell it yet.
You hungry, but there's no way.
Hangyal.
It can't be hungry. There's no way it's hungry.
Believe it or not, that's to hang out.
Hang out.
Hangyal. Hangyal, yeah, I'm hangyando. I'm hanging out. You know, they couldn't say hanging out, so they say hangyal.
Wow. All right, you got us on that one. I would have never gotten that one.
All right, this is a real tough one because this is a very specialty type of word, okay?
A special type of word.
Special type of word.
Okay.
I will tell you it is involving construction, okay?
All right.
Motomix. Motomix. Motomix.
Of course I know.
What?
It's
motor mix. That's right. They say
mortar mix is called
Motomix.
Motomix.
Yes, they remove the R from the motor, mortar, excuse me, and then they remove the X and they just say Motomix. Motomix.
Only because I was asked to go to Home Depot and buy
Motomix.
Oh boy. Okay. See. So,
it looks like a motor mix, like you're like some kind of motor engine type of thing.
Right.
But no. I had a tough time with this one because it happened to me when I didn't know what it was, and then when my father-in-law was with my father-in-law at the time. He said, hey, Alfredo, I need the Motomix. And I said, Motomix? And then they asked the guy from Home Depot, of course, and he knew right away. So I didn't know what that was. But anyway, I learned a lesson there. All right, well, we'll end in this one, right, Mike? And okay. I apologize to our audience. I'm going to say a bad word.
Oh, this is the not safe for work portion of our podcast. So if you're listening at work on an open speaker, put your headphones on.
Yeah, and this is actually two English words, two legitimate English words together. But when you put them together, they mean something here.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
You got that?
No, but you'll explain it. I have no idea
what
you just
said. Here we go. Eat shit or eating shit. What does that mean?
Eat shit or eating shit.
I apologize. I apologize once again. I usually don't say these words, but it's very important because when somebody says this,
yes,
they're doing something.
Okay. They're saying bad words.
Yeah, you would think, right? Something like that.
Yeah,
right.
Or
eating your words, or eating something. But no, it's doing nothing. That's exactly
So in Spanish,
yes.
How do you say that in Spanish?
Yeah, you say, what are you doing? I'm eating shit.
But
you're doing nothing.
But in Spanish, it would be.
Yes, comiendo mierda. But it's a direct translation.
So I'm not doing anything.
Yes.
Is this
comiendo mierda?
Oh
yes.
My goodness!
So they made up this word. The conjunction of these two words, the combo of these two English legitimate words.
Yes.
Means something down here.
Which in English means absolutely nothing.
Yes, and you're doing nothing. That's what it actually means down here.
So, all right, you piqued my interest here. Let's take this one step further. So that's when you use the Spanish words. The Spanish words, the literal translation is eating.
Yes.
And so are we at the point now where people would even say, what are you doing? And they wouldn't even answer in Spanish. They would just answer,
"Yeah,
nothing. I'm just here eating."
Yes.
Eating really?
Blank, yes. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
Huh.
So when you hear us or hear anybody saying, "Oh, I'm just eating shit," that means I'm not doing anything. Let's do something.
Okay. So, that's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to eat that literally, but.
No.
No, you don't want to do that.
Probably not.
Right.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, well. My goodness. Well, is that all of Alf's talk?
No, but you know what? I tell you something that we need to end this broadcast in a way that, you know, we started, which is you had an issue today. You were really upset about something today. So I want all our listeners to hear about what you were, you know, ranting and raving this morning.
So I came in and I had to get this off my chest because it's just driving me crazy. And it's this latest thing that people are doing. And it makes no sense to me, but it's the baby gender reveal where they have a party and they do some kind of thing to let people know if it's pink, they're having a girl, and if it's blue, they're having a boy. And these things are getting more and more ridiculous. Half of them that you see on social media are comedies because they fail. And the balloons that are supposed to pop, they take off and go flying into the sky, and you never find out if it's going to be a boy or a girl. The other thing that I see couples love to do is have the girl pitch a softball to the father, and he's going to take a bat, and he's going to hit that ball, and the ball's going to explode, and the color inside the ball is going to be the baby. And the most ridiculous people who are uncoordinated are trying to do this. I was watching a video. The guy missed the ball 5 times, and finally, the mom throws the pitch. The guy misses it. It hits the ground. It opens up. Everybody sees what it is there, and it's kind of like I saw a story the other day. Wait, there's more.
Oh goodness.
This couple set up this grand explosion in their backyard in Arizona. The explosion wound up igniting a fire that burned 47,000 acres of property.
Really?
I mean, this is getting out of hand, this gender reveal. Something's got to be done about it.
You're really worked up about this, aren't you, Mike?
I got to tell you.
I don't know what's going on here, Brian. Do you have some cooling drinks or something for us? Because I think it's time for him to move on here.
Well, I'm glad I got that off my chest.
Yes,
I feel much better about that now that I've said it.
Now we have a new segment called Michael's Rant.
Okay, so, great.
All right, with that said, Michael, I think we're at the end of our program.
I think this is the end of Podcast 7. Again, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it for you, and we'll be back with another podcast really soon.